Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. High on the list of collaborations that have to work if a film is to be successful is that of director and cinematographer. It's the lucky director who finds the perfect partner to realize his ideas visually through color, composition, lighting, and camera movement. Joining me today are two young filmmakers who made it work. Joseph Vladeka is the director of Manos Sucias, or Dirty Hands, a film that won him the Best New Narrative Director Award at last year's Tribeca Film Festival. And Alan Blanco is the man who shot and co-wrote the film. Alan graduated from Penn State in 2005 with a degree in film and video. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Patty, for having us.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure.
Your film is about a desperate fisherman and his naive kid brother who embark on a dangerous journey trafficking drugs up the Pacific coast of Colombia. Joe, can you begin by sort of giving us a synopsis of what this movie is?
Well, sort of what you were just talking about is about these two brothers that are from a displaced community in Buenaventura. It's a place with very limited options, and they take this very dangerous job towing this narco torpedo that's submerged off the back of a fishing boat up the coast towards Panama. And, you know, the plot of the film came from research and speaking to real people who have done this type of work. But, you know, the film is much more. The heart of the film is really about sort of a young, naive boy who gets taken into this sort of dangerous, tough world of men. And it's also sort of a glimpse into a world that not a lot of people have seen before. So me and Alan always kind of wanted to tell a simultaneously entertaining film, but also shed light on a social issue that is very prevalent in Colombia, of course, but then also internationally as well.
This would have been an ambitious film for even seasoned veteran filmmakers. And here was this very young, small crew on a first feature film in one of the most dangerous places in the world. Joe, tell us how you came to want to tell this story in the first place.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was a much younger man, having just graduated from college, and I was waiting tables and trying to make short films for a little bit, one of my very close friends, Danilo Kosovic, had been living in South America for a long time and traveling around, and we were waiting tables together at the same time. And right before I got into the graduate film program at NYU, he was going on a trip to Ecuador and Colombia, and I said, I'm going to come with you. So we started traveling along the Pacific coast, and we'd often travel to places that, you know, aren't touristy and not a lot of people go to. And to get to some of these places, you have to pitch rides with local fishermen and the locals, and they'll tell you very frankly what's going on. And you would go through these cities that were very much under siege by many different groups and many people fighting to control the water channels in these areas and stuff. And as a filmmaker, I'm a very curious person, and I think it comes from my background, because my parents are, you know, I'm a mix of different cultures and stuff. So I was always just intrigued with that, this world. And I thought, well, you know, there's definitely an interesting story to be told here.
I want to tell you a little bit about what I read about Buenaventura, Colombia, in researching for this interview. It's described as fear and desperation pervade the ramshackle communities. Life has become a litany of horrors in which mass graves, dismembered bodies, torture, and sexual abuse are commonplace. One community council leader says, "We are closed in, held hostage in our own neighborhoods. Not a day goes by in which you don't hear machine gun fire." Mm-hmm. And yet you two decided to film this not in a stand-in like Puerto Rico or mm-hmm. Florida or Cuba, but in the actual place.
That was, you know, we wanted the film to be as authentic as possible. And we looked at other places, Puerto Rico, like as a possible option to shoot. And I traveled to other parts of Colombia. I traveled to the Caribbean coast and went to Cartagena and checked for different places. But it just wasn't, you know, people speak a very different type of specific type of Spanish in Buenaventura. And we wanted to use the real people and show the real faces from the real place. And we understood that it's this tough, dangerous place. And yes, there's a lot of violence that exists there. But, you know, it exists for the people that live there day to day. We were very lucky to have a lot of gracious people who, you know, allowed us to shoot in their communities. And you know, it's a very sensitive subject matter, but they were very much, you know, open and wanted the story to be told, because in Colombia itself, Buenaventura is a place that's kind of, you know, when it's in the news, it's for very, you know, violence and stuff like that. And we wanted to obviously show that this complicated place has real people there that laugh and enjoy life, but also are caught up in a very complicated situation.
Let me ask both of you what it was about the other that made you want to make this film together. And I'll begin with you, Joe.
Sure.
You picked Alan to be your cinematographer and co-writer.
Well, I mean, I think it came from, you know, we studied together. We were in the same class at NYU, the graduate film program. And we just kind of had a similar idea of what drama was to each other and sort of what kinds of movies we liked. And we realized we had a similar aesthetic. But also, you know, we're different in a lot of ways also, but that can bring sort of the best out of in each other. And so when it came to making this film, I mean, I was very overwhelmed. I had come back from a very intense research trip that I was down in Buenaventura, and I went to another city, Tumaco, which is on the Pacific coast of Colombia, which is also a really tough place. And I came back and I was extremely overwhelmed. I was like, I don't think I can make this movie. I know I've spent years trying to get it going, but it's just like there's no film infrastructure here. It's a volatile place. And my Spanish, like I speak some Spanish, but I'm not fluent. And I'm just like, this is impossible.
And this isn't just ordinary Spanish. This is Spanish.
Colloquial.
It's even difficult even for Spanish speaking people to understand.
And, you know, the great thing about having a good friend is, you know, they'll help you see things clearly. So Alan, I came back and I wanted to really kind of give up on the project. And Alan was like, no, you know, that's ridiculous. Let's write the script together. Let's write it so that we can shoot it. Let's write it practical so that it's not going to cost, you know, millions of dollars to make. And then through that process of writing it, we kind of discovered, well, because Alan is very, very gifted in every sort of department of film. You know, he can be your grip on your film, he can be your sound recordist, he can be your cinematographer. And we just discovered how we were writing the script that was very visual already, and I was like, well, let's just make a pact now. I'll direct it, you'll be the cinematographer, we'll write it together.
I want to talk a little bit about filming this. Here you are on the open sea in the Pacific Ocean in a very dangerous part of the world, filming this. So what was that like?
I would say that we knew on the page that we had to have a level of flexibility between anything from whether or not it pretty much rains every day. So whether it was weather or whether it was the tide or whether it was the unpredictable nature of some of the locations we were allowed to be shooting in and whether or not we would lose a location that day or not. I will say that sometimes having restrictions or unpredictability and knowing that and accepting it and embracing it allows you certain artistic freedoms in a different way, or at least it makes you look at your material in a different way. And since Joe and I had started on the page together and we knew dramatically what every scene needed, not everything we wanted to get, but just what it was in the scene, what the most important dramatic beats were, what we needed to convey to the audience, that if as long as we held true to those as best we could amidst the regular chaos of making a movie, we would always hold fast to that, keep each other to it, and knew that we could always adjust. And so even being out there on the boat, being out there on the water, not being where you needed to be, not having the water sort of work with these two different boats, a camera boat and stuff, no cooperation at all, we knew, okay, what is this scene about? This scene is about this journey of this character at this particular moment. Can we still get it? How can we get it? What's the easiest way we can get it? How can we get the photography to enhance but not be in the way of the fantastic performances that Joe was developing with these actors?
Were you sort of influenced by the make-do attitude of the culture you were filming? And I ask that because there's this gorgeous scene of this makeshift rail car. It's really a motorcycle with what looks like a picnic table attached to it. And this is how people get up and down the river in this little community. But you got the sense of they hobbled this together and they made it work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's similar. I mean, you know, there's no film infrastructure in Buenaventura, so we didn't have, you know, access to lots of film equipment and if we needed it. And so we sort of just embraced that and said, you know, we're going to make this film as practical and use whatever tools we have to make it as cinematic as possible.
John Huston shot so much of his film, Moby Dick, at sea, and he said it was one of the most difficult films he had ever made. How difficult was it to be filming at sea? And did you, you know, lose any of the narco torpedoes that your actors were hauling through the sea?
Well, one thing, it's actually funny, when we were first envisioning the story, we knew that we wanted to do a story with a torpedo because we knew that we had to show it once or twice, have the shot where it goes underwater, and then we didn't have to worry about it anymore. And we thought that, okay, so we always love these chamber dramas where it's two fantastic actors sort of duking it out with strong material in a room somewhere. And that's what we ultimately wanted still, that intimacy. But we wanted to have the cinematic scope of the ocean. So we were like, okay, we'll just make it a boat. So it's like all we need is two great actors in a boat and then we can make the movie. It was a little bit more complicated than that ultimately.
But you did find two exceptional actors. It's their first time doing a film. Tell me a little bit about how you found these two remarkable young men.
Sure, sure. So I was put in touch with a professor who teaches theater in Buenaventura. His name's Manuel Viveros. He's a great friend now, and he was very generous and helped us so much to make the film and when we were there and when we were doing, like, pre-production. But he leads, you know, a troupe of Afro-Colombian students, and they do these tours around Colombia doing sort of Afro-Colombian renditions of certain types of plays, and they present them all around the country. And when I first saw these kids, I was just blown away of sort of just how raw and how talented and how fearless they were. So Jarly and Christian both came from the same school, Univalle Pacifico in Buenaventura, and they came from the same, like, theater group and the same training. And so for me, it was, you know, a lot of people thought that I was working with non-actors, but really they have a lot of craft and they're trained, and they hadn't necessarily been in a film, so a lot of the preparation was getting them to be prepared for sort of the cadence of how a film set works and what it's like to shoot a film. But that was really what inspired me to make the movie. It was when I met these students, because they were so talented. And, you know, and they all are from these barrios in Buenaventura. They all live in this place. But there's incredible artists and talent and musicians in Buenaventura. And that's kind of what we wanted to show in the film as well.
There are two scenes in particular. There's one of Jacobo in the boat, and he is telling his brother that he's reunited with in this terrible situation about the loss of his son. And when he breaks down, I don't think there will be a dry eye in the house. There's another scene where Delio is killing with his bare hands a young boy, desperate as they are, who stole this torpedo. And I'm just wondering what it was like for you, Alan, to shoot those scenes.
Very quickly, I'll say something about Joe, because the way Joe sets up his agreements with his actors is one that garners intense amounts of trust. It's almost kind of like a superpower that Joe has, because his friendships are very close. I count myself one of them. And there's a lot of trust and a lot of vulnerability you allow yourself to have. And smartly, he asked that I be also parts of the rehearsal process, so that in a lot of ways that the performers would also trust me, especially when performing for the camera. And being there with such naked vulnerability from these people who, you know, I'm an outsider. I'm coming from the States. We're making this movie. We're involving with them, and we're getting to know each other. But to get into some of the deepest emotional scars that they themselves personally have, having grown up in this environment, was a privilege. It was a real privilege to be allowed that glimpse and to share that pain with them, and then compounded to know that I was capturing it with the hopes to present it to the world at large. It's a responsibility. It's a responsibility to do that carefully and sensitively. And I think with Joe and the groundwork he did, it really allowed myself the access in order to do that with them and for them.
I can't imagine that you would have done that in more than one take. I don't know how you could get that kind of emotion in more than one take, but you probably did have to do it in more than one.
Yes, you got to, you know, as the director, that's kind of your job, is to push people to discomfort. But they, you know, again, my approach to working with actors is always to make these agreements very much ahead of time, so that they know when the day that we're shooting, like, you know, you might have to do this 20 times and we're not going to move on until we feel like we have it and it's honest and it's sincere. That particular day was a rough day of shooting. You know, the ocean was really rocky and Alan's trying to frame up the shot. And, you know, Jarly, the actor who plays Jacobo, was going through a lot of stuff personally in his life as well. And you know,
it came out
tough
that day in the boat. I mean, it is powerful.
Well, thank you.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. You may not recognize the names Joseph Latica and Alan Blanco, but you will. These two young filmmakers are making a name for themselves with their first feature-length film, Manos Sucias, or Dirty Hands. It's a deeply affecting story set and shot in a part of the world we rarely get to see on screen. The film was executive produced by Spike Lee. I want to talk a little bit about Spike Lee, because he not only executive produced this film, but he was your teacher and your mentor at NYU. Tell us, Alan, a little bit about why he got behind this film.
He's a gracious instructor at NYU Grad Film. He teaches in the third year, and he brings, obviously, a very specific, strong artistic identity. He also serves as the artistic director of the grad program. But he actually brings a workmanship about a real professionalism to the craft and like just how hard, and to him this day, and the man is a legend, and yet I would be hard-pressed to find anybody who works harder at material than he does. He just looks you in the face and he says, do you want to be a filmmaker or not? I know it's hard. I know you feel like it's impossible. I know you think you'll never get your movie, but like, do you want to be a filmmaker or not? Because it's hard and it's always going to be hard. And that is something that he really instilled in us as we moved forward with our project. And he was gracious enough to award one of his grants that he gives to the students for their thesis projects to Joe to continue his research for this project. And that was the very beginning of it. And then after the film was finally captured in a rough cut stage, we presented it to him, and he said, I'm going to put my name on it. I'm going to be executive producer at that stage.
You talked about how hard it was. Was there ever a point where you thought, this is impossible, we can't make this film?
Yes, there's, all the time. I still think that, still today. It makes me actually think of Spike, to be honest with you, because, you know, Spike is type of person that really makes you understand that, like, it's going to be really, really hard, and you just got to find a way to get it done, you know, by any means necessary. Especially if you're starting out and you're trying to make your first feature film. I mean, we chose a very specific film to try to make, and it's its own, you know, most first feature films aren't like this. But still, even if you're making a little feature film here at Penn State College, you know, with your friends and stuff, you're gonna, you know, face some huge obstacles, and you just have to kind of will yourself through it. We're in Buenaventura for a shoot for 10 weeks, 4 weeks of pre-production, 6 weeks of shooting. I mean, it's just like a blur in my memory. I still to this day don't know how I got through the physical every single day shooting the film. It's tough.
Was safety ever a concern?
To be honest, no. I mean, like I said, you know, the violence and sort of everything that exists in Buenaventura, you know, for example, there's all these invisible borders in between these barrios, and it exists with the people there. But for us, we developed the trust with the communities, and we have to give a lot of credit to our producers, Marcia Nunez and Elena Greenlee, who kind of helped yield us into this world as a narrative film team, you know what I mean, and earn their trust. And once the right people, you know, were on our side, I never really felt in danger, just more in danger of ourselves hurting each other because we're mad at each other.
You know, I'm really, really struck by something that Alan said earlier about feeling this responsibility to the community, mm-hmm. and telling socially relevant stories. Is that what motivates you? And I ask that because so often filmmakers, they're in the indie world for a while, but what they really want is to make the next Batman 10, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think... yeah, I mean, it all depends on the individual filmmaker and sort of where you are in your career. I think the initial reason why you start making films is going to be sort of driven by something like that. And me and Alan, you know, even when we talk about the next script ideas we're talking about, we find ourselves kind of treading the same waters of sort of the same themes that we're I mean, we want our next film to be in English and we want it to be on land. But, you know, whether it's issues of race, which is a huge thing that's going on in America right now, you know, and we find ourselves kind of always coming back to that stuff that's really important to us. Now, simultaneously, you know, we love genre movies. We love Batman. You know, I'm the type of filmmaker that doesn't, you know, I'm not like snobby and say, oh, you know, this superhero movie's no good or something. I love it all. And of course, I have dreams of making those movies maybe one day. But I think, you know, you really have to work to get into the position to make those films. And the way you get there is just continuing to tell the stories that you really believe in and make films that you really believe in.
You mentioned race, and race is certainly a part of this film, and it's expressed, really, it's communicated through soccer. I want to talk about that, but first I want to say your crew is interesting for a number of reasons. Alan is a Filipino. By descent, you are Japanese and Polish. Your producer is Brazilian. What did that mean, I guess, to the community that you three or four were so interested in telling their story?
I do think it helps that we are sort of this just odd mixed bag, you know. I mean, I'll certainly say for me personally, when I spent years traveling through Colombia and going to very specific places, people thought I was Colombian. I mean, mm-hmm. I know I'm racially ambiguous, I guess, but I think, you know, for the most part, I look Asian. But
depends of your shape.
I think it might have been I mean, to be honest, maybe it would have been different if I was blonde-haired, blue-eyed. I have no idea. But I think the intention of all of us being that we're Americans and, you know, and having that sensitivity that, you know, we're going to come here. But, like, what do you guys think of this story? You know what I mean? And this is very much how I worked with the actors, you know. Like, the script was an organism that was constantly changing. And we did a lot of table work before we started shooting and a lot of conversations about, you know, well, like, is this what it's really like in Buenaventura? And would this racism, is it too much, you know? And, like, and they'd
and
like,
what did they say? Because it's intense. As a viewer, it's intense.
Well, listen, you know, if you go to Buenaventura, if you go along the Pacific Coast, Colombia, or actually a lot of Latin America, there exists an extremely high amount of racism still, particularly towards, you know, Afro descendants. It's more in your face there, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, in America, at least, you know, you kind of talk about it in a way. Maybe it's more subdued, but it's still present, you know. But there, it's kind of in your face. And to be honest with you, we had a lot more of it in the film we shot. And me and the editor, we didn't want it to kind of, you know, be this overarching, you know, sort of the film. So we pulled a lot of it back. But with talking with the actors and doing it, they wanted more. Charlie just wanted, like, more. And, you know, but we didn't want the film to be just about that. You know, it's just something that we wanted to shed a light on. And again, to show that, you know, all these little pockets in the world, this is the same stuff. You know, people are people everywhere in the world. You know, we're all dealing with kind of the similar issues.
An interesting part of this story is how you got it made. A lot of the money to get it off the ground was raised through crowdsourcing, through a Kickstarter project. Tell me a little bit about that, Alan.
We knew this was going to be a very community-based film, not only in its execution and its subject material, but we knew that it probably had to, even in its own funding. It's not your whatever a typical American indie film might be. I mean, it's in a foreign country. It's a foreign language, relatively unknown cast. It was just finding traditional avenues for financing was not going to be available to us. And we knew that we could network amongst ourselves and to our friends and try to help raise some of the money. And we were lucky enough to and blessed enough that we were able to raise about $60,000 through Kickstarter, which really was the finishing funds for our production. It could not have happened without it.
And it simultaneously brings a lot of awareness to the project. You know, I mean, I hate to be in front of the camera, and I just said I would never do a Kickstarter. But then, you know, when it's like, okay, well, do you just not want to have your film made? I was like, all right, I'll do it. I'll put myself in front of the camera. But it is a full-time job. So anyone who's out there thinking about doing a Kickstarter, just be prepared to be a publicist.
Yes.
We mentioned earlier that you won the Best New Narrative Director at the Tribeca Film Festival. Does that in some way help getting funding for your next film any easier, do you think?
Certainly. I mean, that'll only help. You know, it brings a lot more awareness, you know, and obviously, like, agents and managers and stuff became interested in us because of that award and sort of the play that the film has gotten over the course of the last year. I mean, I'm extremely grateful to the Tribeca Film Festival. I can't tell you how much I love that film festival and the people who run it and just the way they kind of embraced our film and took really, really good care of us. Because for me, it was a very stressful time because it was our North American premiere and, you know, it's in New York. And in a way, it was our second homecoming because the people who weren't Colombian that worked on the film all live in New York. And then, you know, Alan's parents, our father was coming and my parents were coming. So it was, and they accommodated us. And yeah, I'm very grateful for that experience.
You know, speaking of parents, parents are often afraid when a child says, you know, I'm interested in becoming an actor or a filmmaker or a career in the arts. Were your parents supportive or encouraging of the fact that you wanted to be filmmakers? And I'll begin with you, Alan.
My parents were never want for giving me support and belief, even if, to be honest, my parents were not big film buffs at all. They loved, like, Elvis Presley movies kinds of things. But they believed in me enough and wanted me to just pursue my joy wherever it was going to end up, even if it was something that was somewhat alien to them. And my father was at the Tribeca premiere. He actually cried in that scene you were talking about before. And this is a world that I thought my dad didn't know very well. He'd never been to Colombia, never been to the South America, but he still resonated with those characters. And he was singing along with the music because of their religious chants. And in the Philippines, it'd be the same sort of thing. And seeing that connection was the first time I think he connected to that part of me. And that was something that I'll never forget.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I'm very lucky to have my brothers. I have two older brothers, and we're raised by only our mother. And she's this, you know, little Japanese woman who came to America and raised these three boys on her own. But she has always, she was a professional ballroom dancer for part of her life, and she's always loved movies. And my father, I didn't have much of a relationship with my father, but he was also a cinephile as well. So, and, you know, she's from Japan, he's from Poland. So in our house, we would have Kurosawa films, Ozu films, and then we would have great Polish filmmakers like Kieslowski and Andrzej Wajda and stuff. So that stuff was always around, and my mom was always extremely supportive. Yes, of course, simultaneously, she worries about, you know, how you're going to make a living, because it is a very difficult industry to make a living. But, you know, I think when she saw the film, I think there was just the moment where she's like, okay, it might take some time, but he'll be okay. He'll figure it out.
Speaking of figuring it out, you began, Alan, figuring out how to become a filmmaker at Penn State University, and then the two of you met at NYU. And I'm curious to know, because a lot of filmmakers think, college isn't really necessary. They sort of scoff at this academic approach to filmmaking. And I'm wondering how important it was to you to have that academic background.
I think if you view the academic environment, especially with filmmaking, as solely some kind of like a trade school, like you'll learn how to be a director or learn how to be a cinematographer, I think that that's not enough. I think you are invited into environments and communities with like-minded people, and really that's the greatest resource you get out of an academic environment. Now, other people take different paths to where they go, and maybe they're more sort of like singular in a lot of ways, but I needed that support, and especially with this film, the thing I wanted to make sure I said was, it was, for me and for many people, it's easier to advocate and fight harder for a friend than it is for yourself. And so partnering on this film, when writing it and stuff like that, I knew I could push myself harder and go further for the film that I may not have done for myself alone. And that was being beholden to somebody else's responsibility.
I mean, I think the biggest thing, with film school is it's not really the education you get. It's kind of the relationships you form with your fellow classmates. And, you know, each individual filmmaker's path is different. And some people are so talented, they don't need to go to film school. But for us and for me, it was something that I had to go through. And also having a mother who believes very much in education, sort of the Japanese kind of Asian, and I'm sure your family's the same. I mean, they're like, okay, you want to do that? Well, then you have to go to school for that, you know?
I think anyone who sees Mono Susius is going to want to know what you two will be doing next. And I read something about a single mother and a troublesome son, and I'm wondering if this next film might be semi-autobiographical, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the, you know, we have a lot of things kind of like germinating in our mind right now. But yeah, I mean, that's one idea that we have. I mean, we're very interested in sort of a representation that you don't see a lot in films. And one thing certainly is, you know, a female single mother trying to raise a bunch of men and dealing with masculinity in contemporary America. Ironically, no one will fund that film, but me and Alan are interested in that. So.
Yeah, exactly. In those relationships. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, very much so. Like, I often think about that a lot because, you know, my brothers and I were raised without sort of a typical masculine figure in our lives. So what does that mean? And exploring that is interesting to us.
Well, whatever you do, I have absolutely high hopes for it. Your film is gorgeous. Thank you both so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was
a great question. Thank you very much.
That was director Joseph Vladeka and cinematographer Alan Blanco. Blanco graduated from Penn State in 2005 with a degree in film and video. They co-wrote their award-winning first film, Mono Susius, which was executive produced by Spike Lee. To learn more about the film, check our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.